Taking a look at saving water at your home today, and mine as well. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Lucky to have Adam Freihofer with us. He's the Water Use Section Manager in the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Department of Natural Resources. So, questions about how towns and cities manage water? Wondering how you should change your water use during, maybe even during a drought? Or maybe have some ideas about how you already save water. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And just before we broke for news, we had a caller, Adam, who wondered about nitrate contamination and what can be done about it or what is being done about it in terms of maybe as it relates to our drinking water.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. That's obviously a topic that's across the state, and the central part of the state has faced it more so, and particularly because of the sandy soils that exist in the central sands part of the state. What I would say, it's a bit of a balancing act of budgeting. So the idea with agriculture there is to get fertilizers on the ground to keep the crop yields up, but not to have more than you want leaching into that groundwater. So that becomes not only a nutrient question, also becomes a water question, a water conservation question. You want to keep track of how much you're applying to those fields and not apply too much. And one of the things that, you know, to that end, that the potato and vegetable growers and UW took on with our support at DNR a couple of years ago was looking at instrumenting fields to watch when the plants shut down. To the naked eye, they look like they're still growing and would need water, but they're not evaporating any more water. They're basically shutting down for the season. And rather than keep applying water and leaching things like nitrate into the ground, they wouldn't be applying that water. It's a conserving mechanism, but it's also a water quality improvement situation as well. So there are things that go on both the conservation side that can also improve the water quality too.
Dan in Hartford called, couldn't stay with us, but wondering, is it necessary to rinse your jars and your cans for recycling? It seems like a waste of water to Dan.
That's going to be a question for the individual companies that take that on. So all recycling and those facilities sometimes have specific rules about what you can and cannot put in the recycling bin. So I don't want to speak to any more than that. But I do it as well. But it's a really good question.
Bruce in Dover, we'll go to you now. Hi, Bruce.
Hey. You're a great guy. I've been listening to you for years.
Thanks, Bruce.
Don't retire. You're one of my favorite voices. We lost so many. Mm. They retired. My question for Adam is, when the municipal water goes back into service, are you testing for conductivity at all? The old standard 40 years ago used to be 40 micromoles of conductivity. Since then, I'm sure Yellow Springs Instruments, who is the only provider of detection devices for this, has slimmed it down quite a bit more. Could you help me understand that a little better, Adam?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce.
Well, yeah, thanks for the question. I think in terms of municipal water use, the municipalities do a huge suite of testing for their water supply to meet Safe Water Drinking Act requirements. Beyond that, in terms of the instrumentation, I can't really speak to what they're exactly using. I think some of the municipalities would be better suited for that. So I don't want to speculate as to what exactly they're using for their testing. But they are required to meet Safe Water Drinking Act requirements.
Yeah. Janice in Shiocton, on to you now. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I love your program. I live north of Shiocton on the banks of the Wolf River. I have my own well and septic system with a drain field. My concern with this drought and now what you're telling me about nitrates in the rivers how often should I have my well tested?
All right. So groundwater, she's got a well. How often should someone, anybody for that matter, with a well have their water tested?
It's not a bad idea to test it at least annually, so you know. I mean, your private well owners are kind of their own utility operator in some respects. So it's a good idea to know what's in that water, and an annual test lets you know if things have changed and if you need to account for those things in your well, whether it's making sure the well's functioning right, making sure the pump's in the right location. You talked about drought, and sometimes the groundwater levels will drop during a drought. So you want to make sure you're not high and dry. So having your well inspected and tested annually is not a bad idea.
All right. Do we know, we have a pretty good idea of the amount. I mean, there are a lot of wells in this state. Do we know how much water comes out of those wells every year?
Well, we know how much comes out of the high capacity wells because we are able to track that through water use reporting. That's required for larger withdrawals. And by larger withdrawals, any well that has the capacity to pull 100,000 gallons per day is what we're able to track. So that's part of that 1.9 trillion gallons of water that's used every year. We're able to track that. Now there's hundreds of thousands of private wells that the last caller just mentioned that don't need to report their water use to us, that we aren't tracking, residential wells, basically. Those take out a very small amount of water, but it is their water supply, their lone water supply. So obviously equally as important as municipal water supply to them.
Doug in Richfield, we'll go to you now. Hi, Doug.
Hi. An earlier caller said that he captures the condensate from his natural gas furnace, and I believe he actually said that he drinks it and uses it for plants. He should be aware that that is a condensed natural gas, and it's from your flue, and it's very acidic. I mean, I'm watching it in my house slowly eat concrete away. He should check with his service guys or somebody that I think it's a practice that he should stop.
All right, Doug, thanks. Adam, comment?
Yeah, I agree that you should, if you're reusing water, you should know what that source of that water and what that water quality is. That's, kind of where the rain barrel idea comes in. You're capturing water off of your rooftop and through the gutter, and that's fine to apply to, plants that need it in your yard, trees and stuff, particularly, when we have drought periods. That's the banking system, if you will. So knowing the water source and what you're using it for are two big pieces of that water reuse component.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it. Francis emailed to say, it's important to make people aware of how much water is truly used in a reverse osmosis water filtration home system. She believes it's at least 2-to-1 ratio of two parts used in processing and only one part for consumption. And I think that's right, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, I can't speak to the exact mechanisms in terms of the use on the RO systems. I can tell you that when we look at a water coming into a house, whether it's from a well or from a municipality, and we look at the water budget, the checkbook of where all that water goes, that the majority of it does not go to drinking water. Something like an RO system might treat. Usually RO is focused on the drinking water side of things. The majority of that water is going towards toilets, showers, washing machines. That's where a lot of your water is going. So when we look at the impact on total water use and the role in everyone's home, it's usually those types of things and not the drinking water. The drinking water is about only 1% of your total checkbook of your house's water use, which is a tiny amount. But it's obviously an important amount, but a tiny.
Oh, and And I saw your DNR had a note on, or some photos or diagrams, I should say, if you've got a drip in your faucet, 10 drips, shower taking, looking at 10 drips will equal about 500 gallons a year of water. That's amazing.
It adds up, and it's the long game, right? So you think every time you run your wash machine or your dishwasher, and if you have an inefficient model, an old toilet, let's say, every time you're running it, it adds up. Or if your toilet has a leak in it, as time goes, it might not matter that much that day, but as time goes on, it adds up to a significant amount of water, which you, as a ratepayer, if you're a municipality, are paying for. So you want to, it comes back to preserving the system, the ecosystem and the aquifers, but also comes back to your checkbook, not having to pay for water you don't necessarily need or inefficient use of it.
Steve in Adams County, excuse me, Steve in Adams County would like to know how aquifers get refilled.
Great question. So aquifers are, it really comes back to, again, we'll look at that checkbook analogy I was using in the beginning. So when it rains, a percentage of that rain is going to recharge into the ground. It's going to soak into the ground and infiltrate in and reach the water table, the top of the groundwater level in those aquifers. And how much, really depends on precipitation events, depends on the soil. So if we have really clay soils like we do in some parts of the state, we won't see possibly a lot of recharge. More of it will run off into our rivers and streams. If we're in the central sands part of the state where it's very sandy, we may have less runoff and more infiltration of that rainwater into the ground. So we just came off of a record high precipitation period in the late 2010s, and our aquifers filled up. We had so much precipitation in 2018, 2019. We were dealing with the fact that the water table is reaching the land surface. We were having groundwater flooding. And I know, Larry, you talked about that in a previous episode.
Yes.
a couple of days ago. And so this is something, that's where you see too much. The checkbook is overflowing. During droughts, we see the opposite, where we're not getting as much of that precipitation and the water level is starting to fall, and the aquifers are starting to fall. And we saw that last year. After all the record precipitation last year, we had a flash drought. It came on really fast, and it was pretty hard that July, August, September period, and we saw water levels really come down. And so that's part of the climate change discussion of where we're going from really highs to real lows in a hurry and adapting to that. And so that's ultimately, we do a lot of, DNR does a lot of work with us and our partners of monitoring the groundwater levels to evaluate how much of that water is going back into the ground every year and what's it mean for the sustainability of our aquifers across the state of Wisconsin.
Mike in Beaver Dam, we go to you. Hi, Mike.
Hi, I just got a comment on saving water. I got the older porcelain toilet, and what I did, and it's been in there for 30 years, is I just fill up a 2-liter bottle with sand and set it right in the tank. And then I got it out of the Navy 38 years ago, and I still take the old Navy shower instead of a Hollywood shower.
Mike, thanks for calling. Good tips there, Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the toilets, too, there's a quick test that homeowners can, especially with older toilets, can check. They can put a couple of take a clean toilet, put a couple of drops of dye or food coloring into the tank and wait 10 minutes and see if it shows up in the bowl. And if it shows up in the bowl, you have a leak. And so that's usually a pretty simple fix. It's usually the toilet flapper that needs to be corrected. And it's an easy thing that homeowners can do. Obviously, you want to flush that water, that food coloring or dye down once you're done with it so you don't stain the bowl. But it's something easy that homeowners can do. Each one of these toilets over time uses a certain gallon of water, and they've gotten a lot better over time. They've been engineered to use less water but still do the job. So, you know, as homes are replacing things, by default, they're usually getting toilets that are more water efficient. Certainly the thing to look for on appliances and things like toilets are the EPA's water sense label. And that's just indicating that fixture, that toilet is going to be more water efficient, save you money over the long run, you know, as you go. So there, EPA has done a great job of really promoting this nationwide.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay, hello, what's on your mind? Oh, we lost Stella. Ron in La Crosse, Ron called back to say he does not drink the water from his furnace. So we've got that. Well, let's talk some more about actually saving here. If you want to save, somebody wants to save water at home, what are a few easy things they can do to start?
Sure. Well, depending on the age of your home, that's going to be, you know, the first question. If you have an older home, just as things wear out, you know, whether it's a dishwasher that stops working, you need to get a new one, or a washing machine, replacing it with these more water-efficient, energy-efficient fixtures, appliances can save you a lot of money. Like we said, the bathroom is one of the bigger water users, the faucets, the shower, the toilets. So as things have to be replaced, getting those water-efficient fixtures, that can save 20% across the home. The other thing to think about is the lawn, the outside. You know, we are typically Mother Nature takes care of a lot of the watering we need, but other times we have to, you know, folks like to water their grass and make sure it stays green over the course of the summer. We certainly saw this last year across a lot of the state with that drought. Watering early in the morning, less frequently. So you don't need to water every day. If you water once, you know, for a longer period of time, that ends up saving you water, and it's equally or better that for the lawn to do it that way. Keeping your grass longer, letting it grow a little, so that promotes better rooting of your grass. Retaining soil moisture by putting compost or bark around trees and shrubs, that's another thing. Planting, you know, putting plants that are better suited for the variability of our precipitation, especially as we try to navigate climate change. So prairie grasses, which look really nice in yards, that's one option you could do, is replace some of that lawn with native grasses and things like that. So outside you can save, and obviously, you know, we are not the desert Southwest. We're not facing those type of issues. But in Wisconsin, we do tend to use more water in the summer, and that's really because of our outdoor water use. Indoors, you can conserve, like I said, a lot depending on the fixtures, the replacement of them. I think as the caller noted, doing common sense things like possibly taking a quicker shower or not running the water while you're brushing your teeth. These are small little things that we don't often think about, but they all add up in the long run. If you make those changes, they add up over a bigger time period.
Scraping plates instead of rinsing them before putting them in the dishwasher. That's another one. And a lot of the dishwashers today are much more efficient than the older ones from years back. And you're using less water if you use a dishwasher.
Yes. Yeah, the dishwashers now are very efficient in terms of their water use. And the other thing, Larry, to mention on this discussion of water conservation in the home is one that I hadn't really thought about all that much until I started diving into this more, is that our water footprint. We turn on the tap, we get the water, we see that. But it's the things we don't see that also have an impact. It's the things that in our house that require water, require energy to be manufactured or be used. So replacing light bulbs with more energy efficient ones. As we talked about, power plants use three quarters of our water.
Yeah.
So less power is less water use. So, you know, there's things you can do in your home that don't seem necessarily intuitive, but they do add up to water savings.
And there, the DNR website, I thought was pretty cool on water use and so forth. And people should go to the Wisconsin DNR website and I forget exactly, is it water, just water use or something?
Yeah, if you either Google Wisconsin DNR water use, that'll take you to our water use page, which includes really nice interactive tools that show how water is used across the state. But it also has our water conservation page that talks about tips and tricks for indoor and outdoor water conservation. There's also links on that page to EPA's website, some water calculator tools, things that DNR uses quite a bit in our establishment of implementing water conservation across the state.
Adam, it's a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I really appreciate it, and I hope we do this again.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Adam Freihofer, our guest today. He is the Water Use Section Manager in the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin DNR. Great to have him with us. Looking at tomorrow's program, it's our guide to everything you need to know before a trip to the Boundary Waters. Plus, we get a visit from the author of the book Gunflint Falling, Blow Down in the Boundary Waters. That's tomorrow at 11 on The Larry Mueller Show. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store. I'm Larry Mueller.